right, just a show of hands, how many people know what OpenStack is? Awesome. How many people work for a company that's already actively looking at OpenStack? How many people work for a company that's already actively deployed OpenStack? I know these guys already have. I know you have, too. I know you have. Awesome. So at least we're not in a greenfield discussion here. But either way, I'll get into the basics. A little bit about myself. My name is Peter Pouliot. I've been at Microsoft for 3.5 years. My background is traditionally in philosophy. However, somehow I made it into IT. And I also have a master's degree in telecom sec, postgraduate in digital forensics. I've got a ton of certifications and all that other stuff. I've spent the last, 18 plus, almost 20 years doing systems engineering, network engineering, data center infrastructure. Okay. I've also spent, since 2003, I've been working very closely with basically Windows and Linux and open source integration. So I originally worked for a company called Zimian. Zimian was founded by Miguel de Casa, who created GNOME and Mono. So we actually, I was part of the team that ran production GNOME services for the upstream project, as well as all the infrastructure for the GNOME project, and anything that came out of Novell from an open source side, out of that sect of engineering for pretty much 2003 to 2006, or 8. Anyway, continue. So what we're going to talk about today is just a brief high-level overview of the OpenStack project. We'll talk about what we've done in this release cycle, which is the Kilo release cycle just ended. And we'll talk about some of the other projects that are the supporting cast of our OpenStack efforts. OpenStack's a big combination of different technologies, and it relies on a lot of underlying other open source projects that aren't necessarily OpenStack projects native. Those are, some of those are Cloud Init, which you may or may not be familiar with, Open vSwitch, and then Maz and Juju. And then I'm going to talk about a concept that we showed at the OpenStack Summit called the Open Enterprise Cloud. Okay. So to start, we'll talk about OpenStack in general. Here's just a brief slide giving an explanation of the services that OpenStack provides. OpenStack can be thought of as an infrastructure service. You basically, it's a group of loosely coupled technologies that allows you to build a private cloud. That private cloud will look and react very similar to Amazon's AWS. Okay. So the typical things that it would provide are, compute, object storage, block storage, networking, functionality. There's higher level APIs that allow for cloud formation, PaaS layers on top of OpenStack. Once again, this is just high level. I'm going to assume most people know. One of the things that we do, and I specifically work on here at Microsoft, is the continuous integration infrastructure that's required to have drivers in the OpenStack project. At a high level, from a community perspective, the OpenStack model has a surface level API, and the backside of that API implements usually a driver-based model, where you plug in different drivers based on the underlying technology that you are integrating into the upstream API. So for example, Hyper-V can be consumed as a compute, basically a compute node in OpenStack, and we have a Hyper-V driver, which takes the Hyper-V functionality and exposes it via OpenStack APIs. All right. In order for us to have that technology in the OpenStack project, we need to maintain an infrastructure, a dedicated infrastructure, that upon every commit to the upstream project, this infrastructure deploys a cloud on demand and then runs test framework called Tempest that the upstream community built to test the API level functionality. So essentially, like right now, for example, we probably have 22 test runs simultaneously running for every commit. And we usually have a queue, depending upon the time of the cycle. We just finished the first quarter of this release cycle, so it's a feature freeze. So there's usually a good, nice push of code coming in at that point in time. Now, in general, what most people might not necessarily know what CI/CD is. CI, continuous integration, is the continuous process of testing the quality of your software. Okay, it may consist of automated unit tests. There's usually multiple parts being triggered by automation engines. We use a lot of open source tooling. In fact, we use all open source tooling in our continuous integration infrastructure, with the exception of the Windows component that we actually are testing. CI infrastructures are test-driven infrastructures. So, if you think of it in an enterprise scenario, a CI/CD infrastructure could be used to help dramatically reduce your change control windows, right? If we test everything prior to it actually being implemented, we know what's going to happen, and we can determine that it's not going to affect our infrastructure. So I believe CI/CD is actually one of the biggest benefits that OpenStack is sort of delivering to the open source community, right? So a little history of our CI. We stood it up about a little over a year ago with a very small team. There was three of us under deadlines of code removal from the upstream project. This infrastructure, it consists of two physical Hyper-V nodes that get attached to a virtual cloud controller that we then essentially test the API surface from the cloud controller. Right? The entire infrastructure is automated heavily. We use configuration management to do that, to essentially ensure the state of the individual atoms in the infrastructure. Right? So we use Puppet today to do some of that. The reason I chose Puppet when I originally started building it was because Puppet supports like 15 different platforms, right? In our CI, we at any given time run three. So we run Ubuntu, CentOS, and Windows, right? And the reason is because, well, with Ubuntu and essentially a Debian derivative, a Red Hat derivative, and Windows, I can cover any derivative of Linux or Windows on the planet in our testing infrastructure, should we need to. Which is pretty useful if you have a reason, for example, to say switch from, let's say, CentOS to Scientific Linux due to a time constraint, because there might be an upstream broken build. It gives us the ability to not care, and our automation will just work. So, as I mentioned, our CI executes a Tempest test run against every upstream commit to the core projects of Nova, which is the virtualization driver, Neutron, which is the SDN layer of OpenStack, and Cinder, which is the block storage provider. So in terms of what we did this cycle, just as another question, how many people know anything about how Windows works with OpenStack? All right, then I'm going to give you a high level really quick. So today, most people who would typically deploy OpenStack would deploy it with the KVM hypervisor, right? We actually support at a feature level pretty much everything KVM does. And in fact, we actually support things that the KVM community won't support necessarily in their upstream CI. So for example, starting either, I believe it will be the end of this week, we will be the only continuous integration infrastructure to actually be running live migration testing on every commit. So two-node cloud gets built, we migrate virtual machines as part of the test cycle. And we do that via OpenStack API calls. Okay. So from that perspective, this release, we've added, or actually, let's get back. In terms of high-level technology, we have a compute driver, which allows the use of Hyper-V. The network drivers, we support two networking stacks on top of the Windows platform for use in OpenStack. We support the native Hyper-V virtual switching infrastructure, and we also did the work to port OpenVSwitch to Hyper-V. Is anybody in the room familiar, raise of hands, with OpenVSwitch? Okay. OpenVSwitch is the de facto virtual switch for basically open source virtualization today. It is the de facto virtual switch for 99% of all software-defined networking technologies today. Okay. We can take that, install it on Hyper-V, and in fact give you an identical 100% interoperable solution using Windows inside of an OpenStack cloud where you wouldn't even know you were running Windows. You would just think it was exactly what you had deployed to the end user. Underneath it would be Hyper-V, Open vSwitch, Windows Server 2012 R2. So from that perspective, we have, as I said, two network drivers. We have a compute driver that supports a bunch of different Hyper-V functionalities. We also have two storage drivers in the upstream community underneath the Cinder API. You can use Windows Server as an iSCSI target that gets provisioned via OpenStack API calls. And you can also use it as an SMB3 scale-out file server. So essentially, we can take SMB3 volumes and use them like a block device. Those SMB3 volumes get provisioned via Cinder API calls and essentially can get passed to either a KVM or Hyper-V host and then is used as essentially a pass-through device to the guest. Today, those Cinder tests to support those use cases were actually stood up in this release cycle. Question? Yep. What's that? We're going to get to that. I got a full slide just for that. So let's just go through the rest of this real quick. From a CI, we basically did some major CI capacity upgrades, replaced our network fabric, and then, like I said, added some Cinder drivers. The next release of OpenStack is called OpenStack Liberty. OpenStack takes an alphabetic approach to naming. Last release was Kilo. This cycle, we basically, given the politics of the OpenStack community and given the fact that, you know, we're Microsoft and sometimes they're not really sure of what we're doing, we've had a difficult time getting certain pieces of code through the process of acceptance. And because of that, we actually have an upstream, which would be the actual core project, and then downstream, which is all the assets we have that might or might not actually be in the upstream code base. The installers that we release today through Cloud-Based Solutions, which is a company that does our OpenStack development, all of those contain all of the latest code that we have. So you'll get all the features and all that stuff. So if you're pulling OpenStack Nova from the GitHub tree, it may not necessarily contain all the OpenStack assets for Windows. If you pull it from StackForge, which is the, let's say, cloud communities area for doing open source testing of cloud technologies, in that location, you will actually get all the assets that we have. And all the technology that we have today in OpenStack, it's all Apache licensed, and it's all freely available on the web for you to use and consume. All right, so Liberty release. We have a couple actually big things that just got in this week from a Blueprint perspective. One of which is the support of, they're going to allow us to add a Nova driver for basically a Hyper-V cluster. So you can have highly available virtual machine resources that are being provisioned and managed via OpenStack. This has been a discussion that we've had inside the community for about 2.5 years now. Because of the addition of VMware into the OpenStack community and the nature of how VMware implemented their Nova drivers, it created a, not a loophole, but a door for us to, that allowed us to implement high availability features to support this. Typically, the OpenStack community isn't, OpenStack as an architecture was built for scale out versus highly available. So it's not a mantra that you would hear, like cluster everything, right? Like it's OpenStack's built for scalability, not for availability of those virtual machine resources. Although you can attain it, it's a different path to get there. All right, so coming up in the, the rest of the Liberty release, we're looking to add additional testing into the CI. Once again, a lot of these are mandated via our contribution or having existing components and more rigidity getting added in the governance of the upstream project. So they're actually starting to force on a project-by-project basis. If you have code, it needs to be tested, and it needs to be tested in a community-facing CI. All right, how many people here are familiar with Cloud Init? Okay, Cloud Init is the de facto entry point for all cloud automation on all cloud platforms with the exception of Azure today. on all Linux distributions. So if you take any version of Linux and you fire it up on any cloud platform, chances are it's going to use Cloud Init to do some magic when that guest boots and make it so you can access it or reset the administrator password or all that. This project was originally a Canonical, funded project. It was very Ubuntu-centric. Although there were other ports of this technology in, say, CentOS or Red Hat, they were actually forks and they weren't necessarily pushed upstream. Over the course of the last year, we've been able to affect the community and essentially have them restructure the project to allow for more contribution. So we worked very closely with Canonical through multiple steps to combine some technology that we created for Windows to give Windows this functionality on other clouds. And now what's going to happen is it's going to be a unified project for all platforms, open source, that will allow for a single place for you to go and have basically guest initialization services. So today, current work is being done on the 2.0 release of Cloud Init. It is a StackForge project. So once again, it's community project. They now have governance that is not just Canonical. So from people who are, not big fans of some of the technical decisions Shuttleworth makes, that's a good thing, right? It allows for more open contribution. The other thing is the licensing. It's a dual licensing model now. So traditionally, Cloud Init was AGPL. AGPL is rigid. We've gotten Mark Shuttleworth to agree to dual license Cloud Init 2.0 in both AGPL and Apache. Because of that Apache license, it opened it up for others to contribute now, whereas people might not have contributed before because of just the AGPL license. We've already started accepting contribution from Oracle to add Cloud Init support for Solaris. So, and someone's already added FreeBSD support, right? So from that perspective, the opening up of the project is doing its job, and it's creating, you know, more innovation and a central place for people to go and reuse a lot of that. So that's a critical component, one of the key projects that we rely upon for guests on top of OpenStack. What this means is we'll have a unified place for Windows as well. Now, Open vSwitch. It's a good story about Open vSwitch. So we announced our port of Open vSwitch at the OpenStack Summit in Atlanta about a year ago. A week after that, VMware came out and said, hey, we have a team, and we also did a port of Open vSwitch for Hyper-V. So community discussion ensues. Our submission won the architecture battle, but we merged some common code base. As a result, we ended up having, originally the first release we had supported GRE, VXLAN, all the same that was, in the 2.3 release at that time. We ended up losing the GRE tunneling based on the code merger, but it will be back. And essentially what we have today is in the upstream code base, the 2.4 release, the Hyper-V code is labeled as experimental. It is basically maintained and actively contributed to by cloud-based solutions who are our OpenStack vendor that we work with for development, and VMware. Cloud-based solutions was the number one contributor to the Open vSwitch project this last release cycle. And those stats can anybody familiar with Stackalytics, which is a website dedicated to analytics around all the OpenStack projects, you can easily go and look at individual companies' contribution to those projects in different areas based on stats coming out of just the contribution cycle and interaction with Git. So the 2.5 release, which, well, should have been happening now, but because of delay is looking like October, will be the stable release for Open vSwitch for Hyper-V. As an aside, we can confirm that Open vSwitch with Hyper-V works with Open Daylight. So you can have a real SDN story once again. Hyper-V, KVM, it'll be an identical thing, and all that works with an OpenStack as well. And we have tested that at some level, although we don't test it at the same level that we do the regular CI. But we did test it for functionality purpose. So, and we have engaged with the Open Daylight community at some level. I'm hoping to actually speak at a meetup in Boston with the Boston User Group in a couple weeks. All right, one of the other key pieces that we're looking to contribute back to Open vSwitch will be the NVGRE for Linux. Today there is no, if people are familiar with NVGRE, VXLAN, it's basically encapsulation methods that allow us to have more network segments than VLANs provide. It's essentially IP and IP tunneling. NVGRE was a Microsoft standard. VXLAN was a VMware standard. VXLAN was originally the encapsulation method used in Open vSwitch. We've done the work to add NVGRE. We have a proof of concept now, and we're hoping to contribute that upstream as well over the next couple months. All right. Now, anybody familiar with MaaS, Metal as a Service, Juju? All right. When you start building clouds, there's a lot of moving parts, and you need to maintain consistency, configuration, things like that. Deployment can be a hassle, right? One of the technologies that we spent a significant amount of time, we spent a significant amount of time researching deployment technologies that exist today in open source, right? And different orchestration technologies, because I'm sure, how many people are familiar with like Puppet, Chef? Okay, those are, traditionally I would call those configuration management. They manage your machine state. They can put the machine into a particular state. Orchestration from the world that I live in is taking that state and making it exist across multiple machines of different, it could be locations, different cloud providers, could be different hardware platforms, but essentially that level of coordination. We've determined just through where the state of things are that today Juju has the best capability probably for the enterprise, and our vendor cloud-based solutions did the development work to enable Windows to be deployed by MaaS, as well as the orchestration of multiple Microsoft enterprise application workloads using Juju. Now, the cool thing about that is that's not just that can be consumed not just with OpenStack. Juju supports other cloud providers, so Azure, AWS, I forget, Joyent, I believe, is another one. There's a bunch of other local technologies, like local private cloud technologies that it supports too. So essentially, it allows for cloud formation of Windows applications on top of a cloud platform, which is something that, you know, traditionally, really people don't do. Some of those workloads are obviously Active Directory, IIS, SQL, Exchange, SharePoint, Link Server, Hyper-V Cluster. Okay, and we can, as I said, automate the deployment of that with Juju. We actually can also do it with native OpenStack tooling too. So if you're familiar with Heat, Heat is OpenStack's cloud orchestration API. We have Heat templates for these same workloads. So today, you can go to GitHub, download those Heat templates. If you have an OpenStack deployment and the right images, they will deploy those Microsoft applications automatically on top of that infrastructure. All right. So this is sort of what Juju, the web UI, looks like. And essentially, the reason we liked it is because it gives you both direct access to the Juju APIs, so if you want to script it or automate it, you can. If you want to have a UI to build the relationships between the different pieces of automation, you have that too. So it's a little more enterprise-friendly from that perspective. You can get a visualization of what's going on as the automation is taking place. And it does it. Each one of these little boxes represents a charm. The lines represent the relationship between the atomic component and the other piece. So for example, if you think of a three-tier application, it'll consist of a web server, middleware, and a database. The charms will help understand the relationship between those and assemble it properly automatically for you. Okay. Now, the next thing I'm gonna talk about is something that we showed at the OpenStack Summit in Vancouver a month ago. We have a lot of open source assets that we use with Windows. And one of the things that we wanted to highlight was that you can take Hyper-V and we can build an open cloud environment using open source tools to support you know, that will work and work at scale, right? With Microsoft's recent announcement last year, I think it was a little over a year ago, of their involvement in Open Compute, and we have our own Open Compute server spec. What we did is we took that spec, a chassis, with Microsoft's OCS, and these technologies, and we brought it to Vancouver. And in Vancouver, what it was doing was sitting there, continuously deploying an OpenStack environment with Windows, and all the Microsoft components in their glory, let's say. Okay, and we're going to go through sort of what those are. So the main ideas with this Open Enterprise Cloud is a full automation from bare metal to applications, right? We want to use open technologies and open standards, right? We want to use Windows Server and Hyper-V as a requirement because Microsoft has a good customer base in the enterprise, right? We want to use software-defined networking and NFV if possible. And it needs to be have scalable and inexpensive storage. Okay, all these things are pretty much tenets of what OpenStack was built on anyway. And we want to use a modern cloud optimized with hardware capable of you know, that are in your existing infrastructure or, you know, could be. So what we did is we took all these different components together and we automated it using Maz and Juju, and we did it where we can deploy it onto a 32 rack stamp in under 2 hours. So that's a full OpenStack deployment with storage, two storage solutions, Ceph and, you know, scale out file services, both exposed via Cinder, fully deployed in your environment under 2 hours. It's pretty impressive just from where I stand. So, as I said, some of the core components, Open Compute, right? Open hardware platform, OpenStack, open source cloud computing framework, Juju Maz, open source orchestration and bare metal provisioning, Open vSwitch, open source software-defined networking, right? Cumulus Linux, we use Cumulus Linux with the Cumulus switches on the network side to show that, look, it's a truly an open environment. And then, of course, Hyper-V. Because we think Hyper-V has a place as a hypervisor in the enterprise. A little more about the OEC hardware. The Open Cloud Server is the name of the spec, the Open Compute spec that Microsoft contributed. It's basically a chassis. There is a chassis manager, a motherboard. And essentially, how many people are familiar with Open Compute? High level, Open Compute came out of Facebook, I don't know, about 5 years ago. They decided to reinvent the data center in a more efficient way, okay? Since, you know, first announced by Facebook, a lot of the core financial companies, like I know for a fact, both Goldman and Fidelity contributed to the Open Compute project. Fidelity contributed a rack. Basically, because the Facebook's design of Open Compute is a 22-inch, essentially, server. They created a rack that will allow you to go from a 19-inch to a 22-inch and back. So you could easily deploy that and have both legacy server infrastructure next to Open Compute. But just to give you an idea, you know, the whole goal of Open Compute is to reduce the cost of operation of a data center, optimize the efficiencies of managing those hardware platforms, right? Make it easier to work in. And essentially, you know, lower your operational cost. The OEC storage story in our deployment, we used a combination of both Ceph and Windows scale-out file services being exported via Cinder APIs. We can consume, with the two of those, you can pretty much have a very flexible storage story in that cloud environment. We can use SAS, SATA, you know, any type of storage technology. We can provide tiering based on virtual machine placement with the OpenStack scheduler. And once again, we can deploy it alongside traditional traditional servers in the same form factor that you would consume, that you're used to consuming. All right, once again, a little more about the deployment. We actually have multiple ways that we can deploy this solution. We can do it using the MAZ Juju mechanisms, or we can actually use it doing 100% native OpenStack goodness. So Cloud-Based Solutions did the work, not only to enable the OEC chassis in MAZ and Juju, they also did the work to enable it in the upstream Ironic project. Ironic is an OpenStack project committed to bare metal deployments. Okay, so using the OpenStack workflow to deploy your physical server assets. All right, so if you're familiar with how OpenStack deploys a virtual machine, it's very it would do the similar things, but use it to deploy your bare metal. Now, this deployment, we can actually do it. We have a tool that Cloud-Based Solutions released called vMagine. vMagine provides a Microsoft IT Pro experience to installing OpenStack. So we give you an MSI executable that you can click and fill in the data you want, next. You have a running OpenStack deployment on top of any Windows instance that supports Hyper-V. So if you have a piece of hardware with Windows client on it, 7 or 8, 8.1, I think 7 has Hyper-V2, you technically can install it on that. Now, with OpenStack, we target the newer releases of Windows because that's where we get the most features that we can consume. So obviously, you'll have a better experience using the newer versions of Windows and get more functionality out of OpenStack. And once again, all this can be used with both Hyper-V Server, Windows Server, Windows Core, any of those. All right, a little more on networking and SDN. As I said, we use Open vSwitch. Once again, Open vSwitch gives us basically a plane of interoperability at the networking layer. We can use identical encapsulation methods as we would on Linux with Hyper-V and allow our end users to have the same networking fabric regardless of hypervisor, which is a pretty big deal because today, you know, the software-defined networking, NFV, network function virtualization, these are all things that are emerging, young technologies. The layers of encapsulation complicate things, right? One thing I find is when you step into the enterprise, people's awareness or knowledge of fundamental networking isn't as strong as you would hope. And when you get into higher levels of encapsulation, it gets more complicated. So if you don't have a strong networking base, you're going to have problems. So from that perspective, having a common plane where the people who are already doing this are already using Open vSwitch, having that same skill set be transferable onto a different operating system is pretty key. And we find it valuable from that perspective. Most of our customers today who are using OpenStack are using a dual use case scenario where they're running their Linux workloads on top of KVM and their Windows workloads on top of Hyper-V. This allows us to give them a better, more consistent deployment model. OpenStack Neutron, as I mentioned, is the fundamental SDN layer. It provides the networking API surface that allows you to create virtual switches, create virtual networks in the OpenStack environment. This sits above Open vSwitch and essentially coordinates the operations across the virtual switching fabric. As I mentioned before, we could also, in this case, use something like Open Daylight underneath Neutron above Open vSwitch and have that provide the core SDN logic and NF network function virtualization if you wanted it. And then in the example that we brought to Vancouver, as I said, we used the open switching platform with Cumulus Linux to show that this is truly an open solution. All right, how many people are familiar with the analogy of pets versus cattle? All right, when we talk about cloud workloads and the way people use clouds, we typically do it in the discussion of pets versus cattle. And you say, well, what does that mean? Well, your pets are those animals that, you know, they sleep with you, you feed them every day, they're your lap dog, your cat, whatever. You love and cherish that animal, and you keep it close to you, and you take care of it. That's your typical, what I would say, legacy server workload, right? We have this server in the back room that we have a group of IT guys, you know, watching over with their monitoring tools and their, you know, management platforms, and ensuring that that thing is always going to be there and then never going to go away. Okay, in a traditional OpenStack model, it's a little different, right? We can work with those pets, but the architecture really works well for transient workloads. So think of it, things that are temporary, like a desktop, right, or a batch job, right? Things that don't need to necessarily stay there and run all the time, but can get instantiated, destroyed, and reinstantiated. So if you think about it from a volume perspective, it's like the herd of cattle. We can say, oh, give us 10,000 of these batch jobs and let them run. And when we're done, they just disappear and they go away until we need it again. That's the cattle mentality, okay? Traditional virtualization tooling and management is usually targeted more towards the pet scenario. The cattle scenario is what is coming out of growing, you know, basically the people building applications on top of existing cloud services or their own internal private clouds are changing the way we think about application deployment and application like preservation, high availability, all those things, right? They're reinventing it in some cases, relying less on the lower levels of let's say high cost clustering, you know, traditional high availability technologies, and then going a different route using the available surface level APIs to reinstantiate versus having, you know, low level monitoring. So it's a different sort of mind shift, the pets to cattle. OpenStack can be consumed for both. In most cases today, they originally get deployed for the cattle use case, and then the pets sort of come along later. So this is actually what it looked like. That's the OCS rack at the bottom. We have, I believe there's 10 blades there. The Cumulus network switches in the back. And that's real. It's not fake. It's not a toy, as some people thought it was. It's real hardware. It's a real scalable private cloud solution that's built on open source technologies and open technologies. Anybody have any questions? Go for it.
To your knowledge, how many customers has deployed OpenStack with Windows backend?
Okay, so today, the ones that I can talk about, we have two that have publicly done it. Okay, the one which I can name is CERN. So CERN has been running OpenStack with Hyper-V in production for over 2 years. Okay, so a little history for you too. Everybody knows about IBM. IBM is an OpenStack company. Right, they are one of the largest contributors to OpenStack. The first OpenStack product that IBM shipped in its original form, the only hypervisor that it supported was Hyper-V. Obviously, that changed over time. But I like to say, given the size of our team and how small we were, the fact that they were willing to productize our work that early, pretty big deal. It's a good testament to the quality that we have in those assets today. So anyway, that's CERN's the biggest one. The smaller of the two that I can talk about is a media company. They use it to basically host and deploy their web assets. So it's .NET, a lot of .NET applications, I believe, on top of a traditional IaaS type multi-tier, and they're out of New York. So those are the two public ones. From a like other people looking at it, let's say, you know, to speak generally, financial institutions, I would say are the ones who are looking at it very closely right now, specifically ones that care about technology, right, and are looking to build a cloud infrastructure or replace the existing sort of cloud infrastructure that they've been cobbling together over the last few years, right? That's usually like where I see OpenStack fitting in. You have a lot of these big enterprises have done sort of their own sort of greenfield virtualization management solutions. And in most cases, they're looking to replace what they did in-house with OpenStack. And the way that they present it, I guess, is OpenStack provides the architecture, and that architecture doesn't necessarily have to be re-architected every time you add a new component. So that's sort of why they're choosing it, right? It gives them a path at which they can say, okay, we can build this, and then come a year, 2 years, if I want to replace any given component of the architecture, I can, without actually having to re-architect the whole infrastructure all over again. So that's one of the like driving factors as to, I think, like choice of why they choose OpenStack. But yep.
Since Microsoft is contributing so much to OpenStack, will there be a Microsoft distro of OpenStack?
I hope so. I hope so. I can't say that today. I can say that we've definitely gotten the discussions to happen inside, right? We've definitely made enough noise where, our customers find us accidentally. You know, we're not, you know, I'll be honest, Microsoft today isn't selling OpenStack, right? This has been, I've been at this trying to get Microsoft to really do OpenStack now for over 4 years, all right? I think that there is a definite space wide open for us in that OpenStack market. It's just a matter of making corporate leadership realize that is something that we could compete in. And that's the thing. Right now, I think there's in general, cloud's very fast moving. The technology moves extremely fast. OpenStack as a project, if you think about it, releases every 6 months. That's pretty quick, right? And we're not just talking it releases little things every 6 months. We're talking like, you know, we're pretty much adding another 3 to 6 projects to the core project every 6 months. When I started, there were 3 OpenStack projects. I think there's over 20 some odd today. So you see, when you have something that fast moving, if you can, the way that I look at it is we can paint a very compelling story, not just with how well we can operate in that environment, and in that project and in the project ecosystem, but also with the quality of the technology that we have in that. We're not really doing anything different. Well, we're just using Windows in a different way, right? And to be perfectly honest, I've had 10 years plus experience running Windows like Linux. You get a lot of benefits when you, just from a computer science perspective, when you run systems like that. So, I think what we're trying to do is show that, it's not necessarily just the technology, it's the how we're doing it differently, right? Like the biggest asset that the OpenStack community is actually providing is the concept that CI/CD is the way, which it is. The reality of it is if you can automate everything, it makes it a lot easier to do the next thing. So, anyway, hope that answers your question. Anybody else? Lauren? If nobody has anything else, I'll be here for questions if people want to talk. Thanks, as always, Darren.
Thank you very much, Peter.